You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked-about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host. Our guest, Sam Cobbs, who is the president and CEO of Tipping Point Community. Sam, welcome back for part two of our interview, where we get to talk about what you learned as a grant seeker and how that is now informing your grant making. And I want to talk also with you about what it means to be an African American heading a major philanthropic institution. And we'll see also where our conversation goes today beyond that. Sam, you are in, as I mentioned up front, an enviable position of actually being a grant maker, which is, you know, they're not so many of them as there are people who are out there looking for grants. You also are unusual in that you are leading a grant making organization and you're African-American, which makes you yet even more rare. I have talked a bit about how challenging it is to me to look at certain organizations that are in the grant-making field, and they are not as diverse in their leadership as they could be. But yet here you are. And as an African-American leading a grant-making organization, do you think you bring a different perspective to the work that makes it better that you're in the job potentially, or at least more meaningful in some ways than if you weren't in that role?
Yes, I do. And there's a reason why I think me and people like me bring something different to the world of philanthropy. And so the first thing I would say that we bring, whether you're talking about me or Fred Blackwell or others who are in this position, we show that it can be done and that everyone needs to be able to see themselves somewhere else on some level at the top of their industry to show that there is a pathway there, regardless of how tough that pathway may be. So that's the first thing. Secondly, there's this concept called proximity, right? How proximate are you to the work? Meaning how are you coming to an understanding of the work? And so for people like me and others who have lived experience, who struggled to get through college, right? We're just not reading books about the theory of how do you help people get to college and get through college. We've actually lived it, right? So it is our life. And so we have an understanding of the sacrifice and the struggle that it took that books in theory won't necessarily be able to fully articulate. Not saying that the books and theories aren't important, but you need the second piece of that to really understand what it is that people are going through, right? And I give you an example of why you need that. And even running an organization, sometimes I would have my case managers come in and say, Sam isn't following his plan. And his plan was that he wanted to get his GED when he came. And now he's not going to GED classes, right? And my question to them would be, has Sam all of a sudden decided that education is no longer important for him? And if he hasn't decided that education is no longer important, there has to be something that is getting in the way. There is an obstacle that he is having trouble overcoming that is preventing him from doing the things that he has said that he wants to do. And it is up to us to figure out what that obstacle is and help him navigate that obstacle. It could be something as simple as the bus routes have changed. And now he can't catch the bus there at a convenient time. And so now we just need to help him figure out an additional bus route. And so it takes a level of going through it and having been through it yourself to have an understanding of what that feels like and how do you navigate through that. The other thing that I think it allows us to be is not just better advocates, but authentically ourselves. And so one of the things that happens is that when you start from the bottom art, on some level, you don't have a fear of going back to the bottom because you know that if you climbed a mountain once, that you can replicate that, you can do it again. And so it allows us to be unapologetically ourselves and to really push for the changes, the policies, the way, the procedures, the way that we think things need to happen so that people who are vulnerable and they have voices, they just can't get into the right rooms to use those voices. And how do we help them get access to be able to do that, that we can be authentically ourselves as we're moving in that direction?
This does bring me to want to ask you about this story I read about that you wrote when you were working with your foundation as a grantee, and you had put together this robust data system to really understand how to do your work better and how you were progressing. And you reported to your foundation that you had discovered some things, and the response wasn't necessarily what you got. Why don't you tell that story?
Yeah. So working in the organization, we had built out our data system to really help us understand who it was that we were serving and what were the interventions that actually help them get through. And so we passed on our first evaluation report to all of our grantees and to all of our funders. And one of the potential funders called me and he said, "Sam, I was looking at your data and what I found was that drug use among your young people, once they're in the program, that it goes up, that they come in at intake and they're not using. But then once they get into the program, they start using." I said, "Well, I'm glad you're paying attention to the data, because a lot of times I send these things out and nobody pays attention to it." I said, "But that's not actually what's happening." I said, "What we have done is that we have built trust with young people. And so now they're no longer lying to us. When they come in and they need housing and they're trying to get our help, they don't want to tell us that they're smoking weed, right? But after we built a level of trust with them, after they've entered program, they've been with us for a month, and they know that we're going to care for them and love them and support them unconditionally, then they begin to tell us the truth." And so the whole part of the story is that, are we setting up people to lie to us, right? Are we creating these barriers where in order to get help, whether that is help for an individual who is seeking services, or whether that is an organization that is seeking funding, are we setting up our systems and our processes so that they can lie to us?
Yes. And being authentic selves is the only way I think we can get at that truth so that we can actually be effective in providing support and services. And you mentioned a situation that occurred organizationally around an audit that your organization had to go through as you were growing as an organization that didn't necessarily turn out as pretty as you'd like it. And you had to share those numbers with a couple of your foundation supporters, and you got two different responses to that.
Yeah, and that taught me a lot, Art. And so I had two foundations, and both prided themselves in being relational and what they call engaged funders, that we're in it for the long haul and that we're going to help you get through it. And so when I arrived at First Place, as I said, we were very small. And so we were paying like maybe $8,000 for an audit, and we filled out all of the forms, and we had a finance staff of maybe one. And so we knew that if we were going to grow and begin to accept more government dollars, and that we were going to have better audits and work with people who were going to help us get better. And so we had just gotten some national funding and some local funding. And when that first audit came out, as I said in the piece that I wrote, it actually looked like a War and Peace novel, right? And I've been working in in nonprofits for a long time, and I had never seen an audit that was actually that thick, right? And they came back, and I talked to the auditors about it, and I shared it with my funders. And one funder looked at the audit, and they said, we're not going to fund you anymore, that they had actually committed dollars to us. We had made decisions based on those dollars, and because of that audit, they took those dollars away. The other funder, which is where I work at now, I had a conversation with the CEO and the program officer, and you know, they say, well, this looks bad. And I say, well, you know, we think we can fix it. It's part of it comes from we haven't had the right talent that we need. We haven't been able to put certain systems into place. And they said, so Sam, you think you can fix it? I said, yeah. And they said, so what do you need to fix it? Right. And so instead of running away, they doubled down. And that taught me something, Art. It taught me something then, and it teaches me something now. What it taught me then was that I didn't have to shy away from the issues that we were having as an organization, and that I wasn't going to shy away from them as I was trying to get funding from organizations, because they're eventually going to surface. And what I didn't want to spend my time doing was trying to fit whatever mold it was that they thought they were getting from the organization, that I wanted to spend my time improving the organization and working on in the lives of kids. I didn't want to spend my time being in alignment with who they thought I was or who it was that they wanted me to be or the organization to be. I just wanted the organization and myself to be who we were. And so I was very honest with people in the beginning around that. The second thing that it teaches me now is that I have to be able to make sure that people know that they can trust us, that we will dig in deep, that essentially, on some level, the more issues they have, the more we love them, and the more we're going to support them. And so now I think some of my grantees have heard that. They understand that. So they only come to me now with what's wrong. I was like, ain't you got any happy news for me? Like, because they understand that if they come to me and they come to us and like everything is all good, I'm like, oh, great. You don't need as much from us anymore. Like everything's all good. But if they got some issues going on, then that's when it is that we want to dig in and understand and help them get through those issues if it's possible that we can do that.
Well, that's disrupting philanthropy for sure. I wanted to just ask you about your work at Tipping Point and a little bit about the mission of the organization and what you're trying to do and what you're trying to do to maybe make the organization as effective as it can possibly be.
So the work that we do at Tipping Point Community is that we are in the business of trying to reduce and eliminate poverty in the Bay Area. And so I know that sounds like a grandiose thing, but I actually believe that it's possible. And one of my favorite quotes goes, like, if your dreams should always outweigh your current capacity to achieve them. And if your dreams don't scare you, then they're not big enough. And so that I actually think that we can eliminate poverty in the Bay Area. And the way that we do that is that we're funding organizations who are on the front line of fighting poverty. And these are organizations that are focused in the area of economic mobility, which includes living wage jobs and savings, as well as cash benefits for individuals at the right time. We're working on early childhood because we know that the greatest investment that you can actually make in a kid is from 0 to 5. Just it takes longer to pay off, but it is a huge payoff if kids are ready to learn when they get into kindergarten. We're focusing in on education, both K-12 and access and completion of college. Focusing in on low-income, first-generation college students who are finishing college. And then finally, especially in the Bay Area, we're focusing in on housing and homeless. And so how do we help people prevent homelessness? How do we help them avoid that disruption? But then if they do become homeless, how do we support organizations who are helping them rebuild what it is that they're doing? And then lastly, one of the things that I'd have brought to the organization is this focus on policy and systems change. If you take all of our philanthropic dollars together and you multiply them, let's say times 10, and I'm not talking about the amount of money we spend. I'm talking about all of the endowments and all of that together. And you multiply that by 10, it is still not as big as one federal budget. And so we need to be able to work on policies and systems that actually, again, that are creating and sustaining the problems that we're trying to solve. And so we're focusing in on policy and systems change as well. And one of the things that I think that I brought to the organization, one is an increased focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And part of that equity piece is hiring more people who have done the work, who understand what the work looks like, who can read through the fancy PowerPoints and the fancy presentation to get to the nitty gritty of if this person is having any level of impact with the people that they're serving. And so I use the analogy sometimes, there are two organizations and one of them, everybody was telling me to meet with and finally met with them. They came in and it was beautiful. Presentation, beautiful. PowerPoint, beautiful. Everything was beautiful. And if you've ever spent any time in Oakland and in other inner cities, what you see sometimes is you see these cars and they got these Porsche body kits on them. But underneath it, there is not a Porsche. It just looks like a Porsche. Or as Cat Williams said, you know, the first time he saw that Chrysler 300, he was like, wow, that looks like a Phantom until he saw a Phantom, until he saw the Rolls Royce, right? And so we need people who can understand the difference between that all of that makeup and all of that stuff that's on top to really get in up under the hood. And maybe the exterior is all beat up. Maybe the exterior needs a paint job. But when you dig up under the hood of some of these programs, then what you find is they are true muscle cars, that they got a Ferrari motor up under there. And so we have to seek out those Ferrari motors and avoid these Pintos over here. And sorry if there are listeners out there who still own Pintos. Sorry if I offended you. But we have to avoid those Pintos and really seek out these Ferrari motors. And they're not always going to appear to be Ferraris in the first piece. The second thing that I'm bringing, and this is, you know, I had a call with a bunch of other funders, you know, maybe about a month ago. And they said, well, one of the things that we have to do, and this was a call of people of color who were in philanthropy or trying to disrupt philanthropy. And so we have to help other funders be more risky with their investments. And my response was, why is funding me or why is funding more people of color who are proximate to the work? Why is that more risky than in any other profession? If we're talking about people who have been incarcerated in organizations that are led by formerly incarcerated in any other industry, if I had experience using the product that I was actually selling and developing and improving, that would be considered an asset. Only in the nonprofit space is it considered a deficit. And so at Tipping Point, we are changing not only how we think about that, because we've thought about it right for a long time, but we're trying to challenge philanthropy, both institutionals and individuals, to think about it in a different way. And so that to really understand what is goal versus fool's goal out there, and that there are ways to dig in and to understand. And finally, I'll say, Art, we do a ton of due diligence, right? Which means we're going out, we're asking a lot of questions, we're getting in deep with organizations, we're trying to understand everything. And I had someone ask me that how is doing all of that deep due diligence, how is that equity? And I said, that is perfect equity. Right. Because what we're doing is we're getting in deep. We're not stopping at surface level stuff. Right. We're not talking at surface level stuff. Right. We're going deep and we're talking to literally everybody in the organization at every level. And so it is only then when you truly understand, as my friend David Zinoff says, the soul of the organization. You're not just meeting the representative who's there to greet you the day of. You're getting in deep and understanding the soul of the organization, which then really helps you understand if they have the ability and if they're having true impact with the people that they're working with.
Well, Sam, I could go on another 4 or 5 hours having you answer these questions that I dream up when I get a chance to speak to a grant maker. Sam, I just want to thank you for giving us your time to do this interview and for all the great work that you're doing at Tipping Point and the work that you've done throughout your career to make a difference in the lives of people. And let me just give you the last word here to just share with us your aspiration for those in our sector who are working every day to make change.
The aspiration that I have for those in our sector who are trying to make change is that if nobody else understands or sees the change that you're making, is that you take a step back in that you see it for yourself. And that I understand that there's a gospel song that I like to listen to. And the theme of it is that every once in a while, you just have to encourage yourself. You may not get encouragement from others, but you just may have to encourage yourself. And so I would hope that they're encouraging themselves. I would hope that they're getting these small kind of rewards and booster shots, that they're getting these calls from Charles and others that they have helped along the way. And that at the end of the day, it is really about how it is that you feel about the job that you've done and the amount of people that you've helped. And that is going to show up, and that's going to be your legacy. And so I wish all of the people who are out there who are trying to help the people who haven't had the same opportunities and privilege that some of us have had, I wish you the best of luck. I hope to get to meet you and break bread and talk about the work that you're doing and to be able to help in any way that I possibly can, whether that is with treasure or with talent. And so I want to thank you, Art, for putting on this series and doing the work that you're doing and really shedding light on these issues with a broader audience. And I thank you for that.
Sam, I thank you so much for giving us this time. I wish you continued success with all the work that you're doing to help organizations, help people. And to all of our listeners, I thank you for listening. If you want to hear other interviews, you can find us very simply on all major podcast platforms. This is the Heart of Giving Podcast.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving Podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only, and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.